Laclapus and his friends were going home. Normally, they would have been filled with all kinds of stories and jokes and laughter about everything that had gone on during their days in Jerusalem with their friends. But this year, well, this time they were strangely sullen and withdrawn. This year, they were just thankful to be going home. Home to fishing nets and tax booths, missed appointments, noisy children demanding spouses, and merciful routine. They just wanted some normalcy, something to hold on to. Maybe they should have known. After all, the religious officials had been anything but secretive about their desire to, well, to at least arrest Jesus, if not kill him. I mean, it had only been a few weeks since they had managed to seize him in Jerusalem and incite a riot against him. The mob was attempting to drag him out of the city gates in order to stone him when Jesus just looked at them all like they had two heads and calmly walked away. You know, it was like it had become a game with him. He had outmaneuvered his enemies so many times that even his followers began to get in the mood. They always waited for him to make his final move, and they cheered when he was able to just walk away. You know, it never occurred to them that the day would come when he would actually lose the sparring match. He was, after all, the Messiah. Or at least that's what they thought. Maybe the centurions were right. In the end, he couldn't even save himself, much less the nation. And now? Well, now it seemed as though the officials had stolen his body in their last act of revenge. Oh, there was a group of women that had gone to the tomb early in the morning and had returned to say that they had seen an angel, and the angel said he was alive, but dead men just don't get up and start walking around. And so when the disciples went back to the tomb and they found that it was indeed empty, but there was no angel, no one really knew what to do. So finally, Cleopas and his friend did the only reasonable thing. There wasn't any good reason to stay in Jerusalem. So they left in order to reach Emmaus by sundown. Now, Christians, this is one of those convenient places in the story where we like to rise up and ditch the disciples. I mean, after all, they should have known. They were with him for 3 years. They saw his miracles. They heard his stories. And he tried on more than one time to attempt to tell them what was going to happen. And these two, well, there's evidence that they must have been extremely close to Jesus. So they should have known. They should have been able to put all the pieces together and remember what he had told them and understand that he was indeed alive. But instead, what do? They turn tail and they run home to Emmaus, leaving everything behind them. It's easy. With 2,000 years separating us and the end of the story, to talk about the lack of the disciples' faith and how they really should have listened and how had they just followed Jesus, everything would have been so much better. But friends, what happens when it's us on the road? What happens when we're the ones whose lives are falling apart, whose dreams are broken, who have faced so many disappointments that even our faith is beginning to wane? We too have the promises, "Lo, I am with you always, even into the end of time. Love hopes all things, believes all things, endures all things. Love never ends." But when we're on the road, how do we react? What do we feel? Do we have questions that need to be answered? Or do we have immediate faith? Do we just want someone to acknowledge what we're feeling? To help us come to grips with what we have lost, so that hopefully we can move forward again? Well, if your faith has ever faltered, if you have ever found yourself wondering and questioning, then I'd like you to remember two things. First, Jesus came to these two disciples when they were vulnerable, when their faith was weak, when they felt abandoned and let down. He chose to come to them. He chose to walk beside them, not out of a sense of duty, but out of love. He chose to answer their questions, even when they doubted his presence. In other words, while they had given up on him, Jesus refused to give up on them. And the second thing that we need to remember from this story is that as the men drew near to their destination, Jesus allowed them the option to continue on without him. In other words, his love for them was so great that he was not going to force himself upon them. He was going to allow them to open up their own hearts and their own minds and invite him back into their lives. This is an especially important point for us to remember. At that exact moment when we too must decide, are we going to allow him into our lives? Are we going to trust him and put our faith back in him? He will not come in unless we ask him to do so. Søren Kierkegaard was a Danish philosopher who lived in Copenhagen during the mid to late 1800s. While his mother was a quiet and compassionate woman who had actually been a servant for the man that she eventually married, a man who was remembered by his son as someone who was quite stern and very distant from his family. It wasn't that his father was intentionally mean. As a matter of fact, he was known to be a very generous man, and he raised his children to have compassion for those who were poor and downtrodden. And yet, despite his social conscience that was born from a deep understanding of the gospel, the elder Mr. Kierkegaard was convinced that Christ didn't want to have anything to do with him. As a matter of fact, he was equally convinced that because of the sins of his youth, because he had been so terrible, that his entire family was going to die before he was. It was his punishment for his past deeds. And they would die not all at once, mind you, but one by one, so that the agony was prolonged. And in an almost self-fulfilling prophecy, tragedy did seem to visit the Kierkegaard family with great regularity. Five of his seven children did die before he did. And yes, the same was true for his wife, who was almost 20 years younger than him. It had seemed that Christ was indeed angry and absent from his life. What he couldn't see, what he refused to see, however, was the blessings that Christ had continued to hand to him throughout his life. The city of Copenhagen was much, much better because of the Kierkegaard family. And likewise, the church was blessed by the leadership they offered. Soren himself became a very famous figure in Copenhagen and beyond, but his brother was also equally famous. He became a bishop to the church. And between the two of them, they helped the church maneuver the muddy waters of change. But his father couldn't see it. He could never accept the fact that Christ himself found him acceptable until the end of his life. It was then that he finally understood that Christ had been with him all along. Because of his own brokenness and failed dreams, he had simply failed to invite the Christ in. My friends, don't make the same mistake. Despite the sins that we have committed, the brokenness we endured, or the lack of faith we have shown, Easter is God's promise that nothing, absolutely nothing, can separate us from the love that is ours through Christ. And can you believe it? He has actually chosen to be with us, to walk with us wherever life happens to take us. All we have to do is invite him in. All we have to do is welcome him. To God be the glory.
Amen.
Amen.